for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And this is For The Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast with over, I don't know, it was like 50 years of playing PlayStation and like 15 years in that games media combined. I'd like to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopcultures, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watches on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, leave a comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist. Woo, Max, what a Monday. What a Monday. I'm exhausted. I'm absolutely zonked. Now, granted, your Monday is a whole lot worse. As we were discussing before we went live, you just blew apart your phone.
Yeah, I was so tired at work that I like shut my eyes as I was walking, walked straight into a desk, crushed my phone between my thigh and the desk, and have broken the LCD screen completely.
Like, erupted it. But like, only like from what you said, it's only internal. Like, there's no external crack.
There is no crack in the screen, but I've you know how when you push a TV too hard or a screen too hard, it like wigs out. That.
Like, I'm impressed that you're. Muscular thighs were so evenly displaced that it like equally crushed the phone to like not crack in an individual part, but just blast it all over the screen. So yeah. shout out to those big thighs, doing God's work.
Yeah. So that has been my day of ringing around, and I'm now using my old phone, which I broke at PAX a couple of years ago. I dropped my power brick on it, and it has a gigantic bullet hole in it, essentially.
But yeah, you've got an avenue. You got it sorted.
Mum's coming down next week, so I rang her. I'm like, hey, have you got any like old phones that are like in decent condition? She rings me back, and she's like, oh, I've got an iPhone 14, I've got an iPhone 13, I've got an iPhone 12. I'm like, I don't want an iPhone. Like, thanks, but no thanks.
It's See, that's the challenge. I love my iPhone, but it's because I've been using one since iPhone 3. So for me, I'm just too lazy to ever change. And it works. And I don't have to think about it.
I like being able to install apps that I download from other locations.
That is true. Like, the lack of a closed garden is pretty nice. Pretty nice. But pretty nice. For myself, just working. Had a full day up at a school in Werribee, and which is a town probably about
an hour. How is that in your zone?
It's the external of the zone because it's too far away from like the Melbourne circuit. It's the same way that Echuca falls within my catchment because it's semi-regional, and that's what we are. So spent a full day in Werribee. That was interesting. Them kids. It's a very expensive private school, or at least a very nice looking private school. Chaos
kids.
Which is interesting. But compared to like the other schools I've been to in the area, like it's interesting that like a school that's sitting like here has the shittest kids that I've experienced so far in my like 8 weeks. Not even more than that now. Well, however many weeks I've been on the job.
Pretentious douches.
None. Just kids. It's just kids being kids. Like, it's not like no one was like directly mean. It was just a bunch of dudes trying to like one up each other and be super cool. I think one of the guy's girlfriends was in the class. I don't know what's going on with my camera, by the way. It's just going to turn off here and there. And then you'll get an Elgato logo and then it'll go away and then it'll come back. There it goes. Boom. Oh, I don't know what's going on with that. It's probably something to do over here. There you go. Oh, I turned it off again. My bad. And that's not going to come back on now, is it? There it goes. don't think about things.
Professionals at work, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely. No, essentially what happened is the wire that sits between like the power brick and the camera, it's a little frayed, and I've had to like duct tape it like MacGyver style to make it not work. And it's been fine up until this evening. I don't know what the fuck's changed. Nothing's changed. But something's changed. But other than that, just a interesting good week. Had my son around. That was a blast. Just the two long weekends in a row really threw out like the rhythm of existence, which is bizarre because it was like a 4-day week and then a 3-day week, and now we're back into a 5-day week, and I've got 5 days in classes. I mean, I'm at different schools all days, every day this week, so that'll be. It looks like that, yeah. So little Hadley's trying to sneak in there, but she should be off to bed.
No, you have no pants on. Go to bed.
That is absolutely a good reason to not walk on camera, Hadley. But
Next minute demonetized.
Oh, like immediately. But yeah, outside of that, there's not a whole lot going on in my world. It's been pretty chill, but. So let's get into the section we call what we've been playing. Max, what have you been playing? I know the answer, and this is the fun part. Normally we fuck around before we get to this section, but I'm confident that I reckon I can get about 10-15 minutes out of you just on Clair Obscur, whatever you pronounce it, Exposition 33.
Well, I roll credits on Oblivion. So as you alluded to, I am playing still Clair Obscura Expedition 33, thanks to Games Pass on the PC. shout out there. the game is fantastic. So I first saw it at, I want to say, the start of the year when Xbox did their showcase in January, I think it was. And at the time, they showed off a bunch of the gameplay. It was a turn-based RPG with a little bit of spice. That being the dodge and parry system that they've added in. I've likened this game to turn-based Dark Souls with a Final Fantasy story.
Which is probably the most max sentence I've ever heard in my life.
So this is from the dev team Sandfall Interactive. It is their very first game. It's a team of 30 out of France. They are currently sitting on the highest Metacritic rated game of this year, with the highest user rating of all time.
Fucking weebs.
So not bad for a debut. So essentially, you are playing as a team of people who are part of Expedition 33. Essentially what happens is there is a monolith with a number painted on it. When your age is painted on the monolith, what happens is there's a thing called the Gommage, and essentially you just fucking die. You disappear into petals and you float away into nothingness. So the expedition's job is essentially they're like, well, we're going to be the next number on the monolith is going to be 33 because it goes down every year. We're all 32. We're going to die next year anyway. We are going to try and stop this thing from painting our number on the wall, and we're going to save the world.
Okay.
And then chaos ensues.
Oh.
Absolutely riveting story. I could not. Up until literally the very end, I was still trying to wrap my head around it.
So how many days has the game been out?
Came out Thursday.
How many days have you been playing it since Thursday?
Every day.
So how many hours have you put into it in over a weekend?
Just over 29.
Jesus Christ.
I think my playtime is like 29:42.
Holy shit.
I rolled credits this morning.
I love it.
I would have rolled credits faster, but I was 40 minutes deep into the end game boss and we lost power at the house.
Oh no!
So let's start again.
No.
So like I said, it is an FRPG, a French RPG.
Sure.
It's the art style is
probably considered like a Western RPG, but I think there seems to be a lot of JRPG influence from what it seems.
Oh yeah, for sure. The art style is immaculate. It's got like all these pastel colors. It's essentially like a painting. It is stunning. All the different areas that you go to. So like most typical RPG games, you have your your areas that you walk around in, your actual like zoned levels, and then you have a world map that you can explore, and then you have locations on that world map that you enter, and then it, you know, shoots you into a loading screen and you explore those areas. The world map is huge. There is so much to do, so much to explore. There's different traversal methods as you progress through the story that help you unlock more and more of that world map, and you can kind of do more and more different things. Much like any other RPG, you have a skill tree. So every time you level up, you get a skill point. Each skill costs a certain amount of skill points to unlock, and you go through to all that stuff. The interesting thing they've added in here, they refer to them as pictos, but they're essentially passive skills. So how it works is you find them in the world. They're pickups or they're boss rewards from... they're rewards from battle, be it bosses or just general trash mobs, or you can buy them from vendors. You equip them to your character. Your character can have three equipped at a time as they're learning them. Once you win four battles with them equipped, they become learnt, and you can you can equip them passively as part of your other skill sets. So you can kind of... the party size is three, so you can essentially learn 9 skills at once, and then everyone can kind of share them once they've leveled up enough to have the passive skill points needed to equip them. There's your standard, like, you know, you'll start with more turn actions. You can, if you're the last member alive, you gain haste or you gain bonus attacks. So most of them are fairly useful. You can kind of build your party the way you want to play. Most of them have fairly, what's the word I'm looking for? Generic roles. You've kind of got your shoehorned mage type who all her skills revolve around elemental magics and healing. You've got a few like bruisers who kind of a bit more tanky but have high risk, high reward damaging skills. And then you've got like your party buffers who have skills that benefit the entire party, be that like buffs or debuffs for the enemies. The story is an absolute roller coaster of a ride. It kind of emotionally gut punches you in the first 30 minutes of the game. The characters are all so well designed and developed. They all have amazing character arcs throughout the story. Like most RPG games, you have like your base camp, and during your stop offs at the base camp, you can interact with all the characters, and you get friendship levels that will open up more dialogue for the characters, will open up new cutscenes, allow them to learn signature skills that you wouldn't otherwise pick up throughout the game unless you specifically do these. Some of the locations on the world map are locked behind friendship levels.
Ooh, okay.
So it encourages you to go out and go, hey, you know, what's going on? How are you coping with all this? And it's a very interesting, it like covers, you know, obviously a big theme in this game is loss, as you know, everyone they know is literally dying every year, and no one can seem to stop it. As Expedition 33, as you progress through the game, you find out that you're the 67th expedition. So 67, lots of people have gone out before us to try and do it, and it all have failed. So as you're progressing through the world, you kind of, one of the collectibles are the journal entries from the previous expeditions, and they kind of give you context clues on where you can find certain things, how to beat certain enemies, how, you know, what their feed out so far, where to go next. It's very interesting. It felt super linear to begin with, but once you hit that world map and you kind of get some of the traversal options, you realize that it's, you can kind of go wherever you want to. There's no, like, obviously you have your overarching, like, this is your objective, but you can kind of go a roundabout way to get there, which is cool. what I originally thought the story was about. It just took some wild twists and turns. It's a really having that entry, the barrier of entry being so low on the fact that you can just play it on Games Pass is really good. I know later in the quick bits, they have actually sold over 1 million units so far.
But that's because it's not available for free on other platforms.
Correct.
So their actual player count's probably exorbitant, but...
Yeah, well, they've peaked Metaphor ReFantazio's Steam concurrent player count. So a lot of people are seeing this. I feel really bad that it launched a day after Oblivion got Shadow Drop.
But I also don't think it's clearly not impacting.
I don't think it's...
If anything, it'll just give it a longer tail.
Yeah, it's one of those things there where they're two different genre of games.
Mm.
Two different sets of people are going to, you know... I've been super keen for Oblivion when the rumors started, but the second Expedition 33 dropped, I haven't touched anything else.
Mm.
I don't want to get too spoilery because the story itself is probably the best part of this game. The combat didn't feel... I mean, most RPGs, you kind of get to the point where you're like button mashing X just to get through the combat.
Mm.
In this, you, because of the combat system with the parries and the dodging, you know, if you land the parry, you get to counterattack. Which obviously helps you get through the monsters faster. There's ranged attacks, so you can free aim like a third person shooter essentially. And enemies have weak spots on them, so you can destroy body parts so they can't use certain attacks anymore. You can hit crit points for massive damage. They made combat more engaging than just attack.
Mm.
Do skill X, do skill Y, which I think was beneficial. Now, there are times where... I felt super overleveled because it's so easy to accidentally grind, because like in a Dark Souls game, when you hit a rest point, all the enemies respawn on the map. So you kind of, if you go back, you have elixirs that will just instantly heal all your party, but once they're empty, you can rest at the expedition flag. You'll get all those uses back, but it respawns all the enemies again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where I accidentally farmed without meaning to, just by running out of things and going back through and repeating certain fights. Yeah. But I was having so much fun with the combat and just the moment-to-moment travel of exploring these different biomes and the different enemy types with each... in each section, in each area, there was always something to find. One thing I noticed really early on too, the level design is fairly simplistic in the sense that if the path is lit, it means you're going the right way towards the objective. If the path is not lit, you're going to be getting, you're going off the beaten path. That's where you're going to find like the merchants or extra gear loot. Side quest stuff. It's not going to progress the main story, but you have that option of going, hey, I know where the main path is that I need to take to get to the next area.
Mm.
So you can actively go, I'm not going to go there first. I'm going to go explore this section just in case I get like moved on.
Yeah.
Which I think is a really nice way of doing it, because there's nothing worse than going, oh shit, now I can't explore that area until I can come back, or and who knows when that's going to be. So having that path set out for you is very interesting. Boss fights in this game are mechanic heavy to a degree.
Okay.
There's always something to do, whether it be they'll spawn in little flying creatures that you have to shoot down before they do a super attack, or it's like, the boss is gathering energy and you can see the point where he's forming his spirit bomb TM and you can just shoot that out of his hand so it deals massive damage to him instead of him getting to throw it at you. It's such a well-designed system that it it allows you to build your characters in a way that you can kind of go balls to the wall and just build for damage, because you have that safety net of like, if I am good enough and I can just keep dodging, I don't need health because I'll never get hit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are no skills that can't be dodged or parried. There's no, like, unblockable skills or undodgeable. Like, everything has a way of interacting with it that will make you take zero damage. So, it's just one of those things of, like, how, you know, how much are you willing to practice? There are difficulty levels in the game. So, I think there's three. I think it's Expert, Explorer, and Story. Story mode is...
That's the easy one, right?
Story mode is the easy one, so enemies do less damage to you, and your parry and dodge windows are larger. Expedition is standard, yep. And then Expert is you have to hit like the pinpoint accuracy to dodge and parry.
And what are you playing on?
I played on Explorer.
Yep, smart.
Yep.
Fantastic. Well, in the chat, Josh LaRosa does ask the question, I'm excited to play this after Indie. Sorry, I had to swallow and I got stuck. Do you guys think that this game would have sold more copies if it didn't launch into Game Pass?
I would love to see the Game Pass numbers. I'd love to see how many like active like players there are playing through Game Pass. Like, if it wasn't available on Game Pass, I would have purchased it.
Yeah.
Because like I'm plugging a controller into my PC, because like when you boot the game up on PC, it's like, hey, we recommend you play this with a controller.
Yeah.
Like, don't try mouse and keyboard it.
From where I would sit, as I look at this, the very strong review scores of this title indicate that if it was not available on Game Pass, very similar to the likes of Elden Ring, but maybe not, because Elden Ring has a large reputation ahead of prior. I do wonder whether, yeah, these strong results, strong scores would have pushed people to pick it up. So a million sold while being on Game Pass is very good. However, I reckon that number could be tripled. Because once again, if you take out PC, if you take out Xbox, that's a million on one platform. Like, you know, granted, it's not. It's also PC in the number that we have. Yeah. But a million across PC and a PlayStation is not good.
Well, it's essentially Steam, yeah, across Steam and PlayStation, yeah.
Exactly. So could this number have been more? Absolutely. Will we know what it is? Probably not. but the team, Sandfall, weren't they?
Yeah, Sandfall.
Sandfall clearly, for whatever reason, either the offer from Microsoft was so brilliant that they had to say yes, or they did not, for whatever reason, think that their game would move that many numbers or get a critic and a player review score of that high. Like, my presumption, right, and for most places, unless Microsoft gives you an ungodly amount of money, there's... the only reason to go on Game Pass is because you are confident your game may not sell without it.
Yeah.
So I assume a big wad of cash.
I mean, it's one of those things, you know, they're a small team. I think it's only 30 odd people. It's their first game. So maybe they just wanted that safety net of like, hey, if this does well, or if this does poorly, we have that safety net of like, at least we may be able to make something else and we're not going to... So,
yeah. There's a couple things at bay, but I guess probably the funniest thing and my favorite conversation I had with you around this was like, hey, this game's reviewing really well. Is this a Betson game? And you're like, fuck no. I'm like, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Not at all. Not at all. I think you get a kick of like 5 minutes out of like doing that, like building the passive skills of the characters themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But then once you got into playing the game, you'd be like,
like, fuck this.
Like if that combat doesn't click with you, I would imagine it would be grueling and tedious.
Mm.
Like I've described it as like a turn-based Dark Souls.
Mm. But granted, almost every game is described as a Dark Souls these days, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
So Is there currently any plans for like DLC or anything?
As far as I'm aware, no.
Because you smashed it in a weekend, like it's a kind of a shame.
I mean, it's got New Game Plus. Like so there's one. I found a super boss, and at the start of the battle, I did like 500,000 damage to it, and its health bar didn't move, and then it proceeded to kick my shit in for 10 turns in a row. And I'm like, I'm clearly missing something, right? Like, there's obviously a mechanic that I'm missing. And it's like, nah, you're supposed to go to New Game Plus and deal more damage. Don't be shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. Because when you can upgrade your weapons to like, I think it's like level 33. I think 33 is the max. Or might be 40, but you don't get the materials to do that until New Game Plus. You're like capped at 20.
Yeah.
Like, there's only so much you can do.
So I can say with confidence, Max, this would be within your, just coming off Split Fiction, being like, oh man, this is going to be within my Game of the Year conversation.
Oh yeah, this as much as I enjoyed playing Split Fiction with my wife, this may be my Game of the Year.
Yeah, wow.
Like unless something crazy comes out of the back end, like unless like Ghost of Yotage crazy or like fucking GTA 6 blows my skirt up.
Doom in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I've never been a Doom guy. yeah, we'll see. But yeah, strong contender. And I hope that it is in the conversation of award shows because it is deservedly so.
With the results that it has received, it wouldn't surprise me if it makes the list. That same list, however, I can say with confidence would have the game that I have spent most of this week thinking about and playing. Now, for those that joined us last week, you may have seen a conversation where Max goes, oh man, you should check out this game. It's called Blue Prince. And I go, okay, yeah, sure, why not, whatever. And then as you proceeded to explain to me what this game is and how it works, you piqued my attention. However, Max,
you've been having dreams about building
I that had yet. No idea what you were getting me into.
The drug.
For those playing at home, Blue Prince is a puzzle adventure game where, very similar to The Witness, it's all about it's all puzzles, it's all world-related puzzles, outside of some memos and some documents that you can read, which there are quite a number of them, because there's a lot of information given within them. However, it's not like there's no cutscenes, or there are some cutscenes, but there's no other characters, it's just you alone in this mansion. The idea being that you are the great nephew of the individual that owns this estate, and it has all been bestowed onto you, bequeathed to you within their last will and testament. However, it comes with a catch. This mansion is a 45-room mansion. In order to receive your bequeathment, I don't know if it's a word, but it is now, you must locate the 46th room. But what makes it more fun is this game is a roguelite game. Every time you run the mansion, the rooms are going to be different. And you get to pick which rooms you go to. And you get to dictate where it goes. And but it's not as simple as, oh, just make your way to the end. Because you can make your way to the end and not know shit. This game has this incredible ability to give you so much, but it is all just under the surface. I have never felt so dumb and so smart at the same time. Inheritance, that's also a good word. I'll go with that. Inheritance is actually a good word. This is like consumed my thoughts in so many ways. And the best thing about it is I also got Phoebe involved. I was like, hey, this is a game that you can play with me. You don't have to do anything because you just get to watch it. But it's a puzzle game. It's going to be beneficial if we play it together. And immediately the art style captures her attention. She's like, oh, this is okay. And then once we start seeing the room structures and she's getting understanding that like that game mechanic. But then once we start unveiling the layers and the secrets of this mansion and how each room has these little intricate details and how even the pictures in the room mean something, it's one of those things, like, it all means something. It all contributes to this larger thing, and I still don't know what it is. I'm like 28 days into the game at this point, which is pretty low-key, small numbers. I think people can be up and I've seen hundreds, I've heard hundreds, even just today. And I'm making a very conscious choice, Max, to not engage in any Googling, in any seeking of a walkthrough. I want to achieve this as purely as I possibly can, which does mean I may crack the shits and stop playing soon if I don't feel smart. But I'm getting such enjoyment, and I've also spread the good word of Blueprints. I've confirmed. I've got my good friend Craig involved. My ex-wife, Millie, when I went to drop my son off, I'm like, yo, you should totally play this Blueprints game this weekend. This game's going to be fucking fantastic. This game's fantastic. I reckon you'll get a kick out of it because she had a lot of fun with The Witness. And I'm also talking to anyone that will listen. I'll be like, yo, Blueprints is pretty sweet. You should go check it out. It's free on PS Plus. What's interesting, Max, and I don't have a clear explanation for it, and I do wonder whether it's a couple of different things. A number of years ago, the idea of playing a rogue-like or a rogue-lite game would make me want to scream because it sounds horrible. But over the last couple of years, either so many of them have gotten better to a point where they can reach out to a larger audience. But I enjoyed the crap out of Hades. What was the other one? Death's Door was also a rogue-lite, wasn't it? Yeah, another game I absolutely adored. Returnal, I loved until I didn't, which was also very quickly.
Hades?
Yeah, Hades was exceptional. I didn't realize how much I'd enjoy Hades. There's likely a stack of games that I wouldn't have touched. And I think Blueprints is one of those. Had it not been free on PS Plus, once again, very similar to Clair Obscur, probably in a lot of ways, I wonder whether I would have jumped on it. I wouldn't have jumped on it now. I would have jumped on it later down the line. Was probably cheaper. Some of the puzzle games don't normally immediately grab my attention. But I am getting, as like I know I'm kept saying, it's just, there are runs that I do which are purely just to get as many rooms in my directory as I can. Is this the room I've seen before? Nah, let's go. And I've also unlocked an alternate external room that now essentially sits as my my larger buff, I guess, because it plays as... would it be a boon in this case? I'm trying to understand the terminology of a roguelike. So have you discovered the outer room in Blueprints?
No.
All right, well, there is a room outside in the yard that is now the room that I go to first in the first thing when I start my day. And what it does, it either gives me a tool shed, as an example, where I can get a couple of items to sort of get me started. There is a shelter, and that shelter will eliminate the effect of three red rooms. And the red rooms are kind of like the rooms that give you a negative. So going to that first is a great way to start your run. And it allows you to then think about your run as you do it. As you mentioned, as we might hide the red room, they're multicolored rooms. Each of them have different properties. Each of them provide different benefits. Something that was touched upon last week, Max, it is a key part to the experience of Blueprints, is steps. At the beginning of the game, you are allocated 50 steps. Now, that's not 50 individual steps because that game would be mighty boring, mighty quick. However, it is every time you enter a room, it takes a step. Of course, there are ways to increase your steps, whether by going to any of the mansion's bedrooms, where you can replace upwards of, you know, 3 to 5 to 10 to multiples. There are rooms that provide you gems, which is the in-game currency, which allows you to place and unlock more limited rooms, more rarer rooms, I guess is probably the best way to explain it. There are keys, because some of the doors are locked. Some have electronic locks. You've got to find a key card. Then there are a series of other items that allow you to explore and get more of these resources throughout the game. There is just... I wish I wasn't so tired, and I wish I was medicated so I could provide a better explanation of how I feel about this game. It's so much fun. I think about it most of the time because I like having it sort of, you know, tinker around in my subconscious. And then I go, oh, hang on. Oh, what about? Oh, I love it. I'm enjoying that feeling so much. And Max, just to demonstrate that I'm an idiot, with this game being about building rooms in this mansion, when I first was communicating this game to my partner Phoebe, she had an idea of, she thought what as I was saying, she thought that the game was called Blueprints, as in blueprints for a house. So then when I boot up the game and she's like, Blueprints? I thought it was called Blueprint. I'm like, what the hell would you... Oh, I'm like, that's a really smart name. Well done, team. I wouldn't have thought about it because I'm an idiot. But look, it is free on PS Plus. I'm pretty confident it's on Game Pass as well. I highly, highly encourage you check this out. At the moment, now, granted, we're only 4 months into the year. I have a feeling this may be... this may be this year's Balatro in a number of ways. I think it may sneak its way through to the back end of the year because I believe it is the third highest Metacritic scored game of the year, or it's within the top 3 or 4. So there's that to keep in mind. But in the chat, Josh LaRosa jumps in and goes, if everything goes to plan, I suspect the game of the year conversation being 1, Blueprints, 2, Expedition 33, 3, GTA 6, 4, Death Stranding 2, 5, Split Fiction, and 6 will either be Ghost of Yote or Monster Hunter Wilds. I think that is a pretty solid and confident list. The last one is the one that I'd be most uncertain on. We didn't have enough information to make that guess. Interestingly, though, I think a game that I don't believe will be in that conversation, but it has certainly demonstrated that it is very highly regarded over the last week and a bit. And that is The Elder Scrolls Oblivion Remaster. So this is a game that we have been talking about for ages. It was leaked yonks ago. And then bit by bit over the last couple of weeks, we've had more information leading to the speculation and then confirmation of a shadow drop in late April. This game came, was it last Thursday?
Wednesday.
Last Wednesday. And a big shout out to the team over at Bethesda ANZ and Power Up PR. We will provide a review code for it on PS5. Max, what's your history with Oblivion?
I played it.
Like back in the day?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I played Morrowind. I played Daggerfall.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
old school.
Look, I've talked about it here before. Like, there, I've had numerous saves of Oblivion on my PS3 back in the day. I eventually save-locked myself in the last one I played, getting smooshed in by a Minotaur. I played that in, like, my first year of university, when I really should have been focusing, I don't know, maybe on my university. Instead, I put hundreds of hours into Oblivion on my PS3. I wasn't aware, or I hadn't really considered, where the game sat in, like, my nostalgia, in my love of, you know, RPGs. Because essentially, it was my first really big and prominent Western RPG that I can think of, right? The one that I put that next level of amount of hours into. So to be able to re-experience it last week was really insane. But to also experience it how it looks is ridiculous. It is night and day. The Oblivion remaster looks fantastic. Character models, so much better. The world, so much better. The UI, like the menu system, so much better. It is incredible, the work that, I want to say Vicarious Visions, but I don't believe that to be the case. It's Virtuous.
Virtuous
have done. Now, knowing that they're also working on the Metal Gear Solid Delta game coming out of the back a bit later in the year, having experienced Oblivion, I'm even more excited for what Metal Gear Solid would look like. Have you spent any time with it?
Yeah, I've played like 4 hours.
Yeah. So how has your experience those 4 hours been?
Once again, I'm playing on PC via Games Pass. It's good. It's funny, like, you know, it obviously looks way better, but that's how I remember the game looking when I played it, like, what, 20 years ago when it came out?
Yeah, see, I don't. All I remember is the giant bloom effects.
I love that all the bugs and the jank are still there. Yep. I'm like, because when I first played, I'm like, you pick your character, you go through the dungeon, you do all that stuff. And I'm like, I wonder if I can still go and instantly max out my stealth by teleporting back into the jail and asking to visit one of the prisoners. And the guy's like, yeah, I'll let you in. And he follows you. And then if you talk to him again and be like, oi, I want to visit one of the prisoners, he's like, okay. And he leaves and closes the door behind him. And then you stand there and pickpocket the prisoners because no one can stop you. You just get infinite stealth points.
That's awesome.
I know that they've left the, like, the, it's still in there. You can build, there's a spot, I think it's inside the Imperial City somewhere, where if you stack a bunch of items and climb on top of it, it teleports you to the end game credits. Like, they're all still there. Like, it's all still there. Like, all the jank is still there. I love it. Like, at level one, you can go get the strongest sword in the game because you just enter the cave and then you leave and you just let them chase you into the Imperial City and the guys are like, oi! And then they fuck him up and then you steal the sword.
I wouldn't recommend that because Oblivion uses level scaling at large. So, like, you'd have the most powerful sword, but it will be the most powerful sword at level one.
Yeah. It's so funny. Same with, like, you know, as soon as I hit level 10, I went and got the skeleton key because I remember playing this game like it was yesterday, apparently. But I can't remember where I put my fucking keys.
Mm. It's weird how deeply, like, some things are just ingrained into us. Like, with that, like, one of the conversations that's been happening this week, and I alluded to it when we first started talking about it, there's been a lot of conversation online of like, oh man, this shouldn't be called a remaster, it should be called a remake. I fundamentally disagree with that. This is absolutely just a reskin of Oblivion in a lot of ways. As you mentioned, all the jank, all the gaps, all the problems that game has had in the past. Like, granted, this is the most, probably the most faithful remaster because it's exactly the same game, but they've just made it look incredible. And it runs reasonably okay. Like, I'm playing on a PS5. I've been playing on performance mode because I just can't do quality mode anymore. Like, the second it starts that little judder, that 20, you know, 30 frame judder, I'm like, ugh! And I have to bounce out almost immediately. But it is absolutely not worth to be considered that remake. That is, look, now granted, don't get me wrong, that is not a slander on the game. That is the understanding of what a remaster is and what a remake are very, very different. And especially in a post Final Fantasy VII remake world, where that is probably the best example and definition of what a remake should be.
Resident Evil 2
as well. If they were to call this remake, I think it would, the positive reception wouldn't be as good. I do believe the shadow drop, even with the rumor mills that it was coming, has certainly added to its positive impact. It has for me. I'm like, oh my God, out of the blue, it's just here. This is incredible. And had I not then fallen deeply, madly in love with Blueprints, I would still be playing Oblivion right now. So it is like, look, I sadly have then also stepped away from Indiana Jones and whatever other games we've had recently that have come our way. And I feel really bad because Indiana Jones looked great. I enjoyed what I played. And then it was like, hey, something shiny. I'm like, ooh, something shiny. And in that same breath, like, there's another game that we received over the week, and that was Days Gone Remastered. This is a title that I forgot was coming. Like, I remember when I got the announcement, I was like, sick. And then it just appears. And I go, oh, hello. The code pops in my inbox. I'm like, fantastic. Now, I haven't played... Actually, no, I lie. I played Days Gone at launch, and then I came back a year or so later with the full intention of getting the platinum, and I did, and it was brilliant. I know it's not so much a hot take these days, but even at the time, I had argued that Days Gone is an exceptional title. What it did is it showed the progression of Sony Bend as they were making. It's almost like they made the game in a linear fashion. They didn't make this scene and then put it in. Like, they all made the game from the beginning, and they built their way through. Because the more you play the game, just gets so much better. And the mechanics get more, you know, more depth, and they get sharper, and they get more efficient. And then once the introduction of the hordes later in the game, it becomes this whole experience. What's beautiful about this remaster, apart from all of it? Now, admittedly, I decided to boot it up at like 11:30 last night, and I was already tired. I played for like half an hour and did that opening scene. It was one of those things where I'm like, oh, okay, look, it looks fine, but it was similar to yourself, Max. It looks like how I remember.
I've never played this, so I'm kind of looking forward to experiencing it in
its ultimate form.
Its best form. Yeah.
I lost my train of thought. Oh yeah, that's all right. It wasn't until I left that first cutscene and we entered the woods of Oregon that I go, oh, this game is whole other space, like, in terms of its remaster. Because the question would be, why does this game need a remaster if it was only on PS4? But dear God, is it pretty. There's DLC as well, which I haven't yet to experience. There's the new Horde Assault mode, which is by far the best part of the game, of the Hordes. The problem is they are so deep into the game, it makes it challenging. And there is a level of skill that is needed in there, like, remembering controls that is just lost on me because I haven't played it in such a while. So I'm going to have to play the game for a little while just to sort of rebuild my skills. I can import my PS4 save if I wanted to. I don't know whether it will immediately pop me all the trophies. That might be an easy platinum. But I'm also not wanting to. But I'm also very aware I have a stack of games in right now that going back and playing Days Gone may not be my best decision. However, I would love to hear what you think of it.
Yeah, well, I'll start. Now that I've kind of wrapped Expedition 33, my gameplay will maybe slow down on that. Mm. And then I kind of
doubt it, but I like your optimism.
Touch base with this. But I mean, you know, we're in May, and May's got like a fucking shitload of games coming out that I also have.
What else
is
coming out?
Elden Ring.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Night Rain. Yeah.
I mean, granted, it's the end of the month. It's dropping the same day as... what is it? I don't know, it's going to bother me now. I mean, Doom's coming out. Metal Gear's coming out. Lost Solicide is the game that I'm thinking of. Lost Solicide comes out the same day as Night Rain.
Well, I think I'm pretty free, but I also I'm so bad at remembering release dates these days.
You got Doom Dark Ages. You got
Fucking Doom. Oh, but Metal Gear's in October, isn't it?
Isn't it now?
No, it's October. I swear it was.
I don't know. I'm looking at games in May and it says Metal Gear Solid. So either this is lying to me, which it probably is. Elden Ring, Doom, Lost Solicide, Metal Eve, Midnight Gear Solid War.
Delta is coming the 26th of August.
Okay.
What the fuck are you reading?
I don't know. Google. The Midnight Walk.
That was a
freaky horror PSVR game, right? Onimusha comes out. Age of Empires 2 is coming out.
Oh, yeah. That sucks the game. But either way, it is a pretty good time. Let me have a quick squeeze. Was there anything else I've been checking out? No, it is not. Even on PC, I've been playing. I haven't really jumped into Schedule 1 all that much this week either.
Well, since you started talking about Days Gone, I have downloaded the game ready to go.
Ah, what a ledge. Because yeah, in the chat, like Dame Duty Dench, our good friend Duty, he has done an incredible retrospective review on his channel. I highly recommend you go check it out. Go look for, here on Twitch is Dame Duty Dench. I believe it may also be the YouTube handle. I don't know, I have a subscribe, so I don't even think about it anymore. I just click on it. But it's a brilliant, brilliant deep dive review. Of a game many, many years after it came out. So granted, they're experiencing it at its absolute peak. However, saying that again now, there's that too. The DLC review is currently uploading. I'll have to check that out when we're done here. But even Josh LaRossa jumps in the chat and goes, Days Gone was great. Way too long to come out. And compared to other first-party exclusives, it deserves a sequel. Look, that's probably the only challenge with Days Gone. It's really long. It feels really long. There are times where it really drags, but it's absolutely worth it. Like, I really found myself connecting to characters like, obviously Deacon St. John and Boozer and the other, slightly connected individuals that you connect up with. But look... It's one of those things where we're looking at, games are coming, they're not here yet. So let's get into the section we call Inform the Players, where we tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation. Max, we have ourselves a release date.
Oh, sorry, what was that? Yeah, we do. We have the ghostly reveal of Ghost of Yote. So shortly after the reveal of and the drop of Oblivion on Microsoft, Sony's like, we should probably let people know what we're doing. Here's a random Twitter post.
Yeah, here's a blog.
So the Ghost of Yotei will release for PlayStation 5 on the 2nd of October this year. This release date was accompanied by a new trailer called The Onryo's List, and it serves as the story setup for the game itself. Quote, 16 years ago in the heart of Izo, called Hokkaido in present day. A gang of outlaws known as the Yotei Six took everything from Atsu. They killed her family, left her for dead, and pinned to a burning ginkgo tree outside of her home.
Wow.
But she survived. Oh. She learned to fight, kill, hunt. And after years, she has returned to fuck up the Six. The Snake, the Oni, the Kitsune, the Spider, the Dragon, and Blood Saito.
Just to clarify, I don't think fuck up the Six was the exact thing. But I like...
I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, a little bit editorializing there.
Pre-orders for the game will be going live on the 2nd of May with Digital Deluxe Edition and a physical collector's edition to choose from.
This is absolutely more of a Max game than it is a Betson game. I loved the feeling of Ghost of Tsushima, but then playing it, I lost interest really quick. The gameplay's great. The gameplay's great, but it's just me. It's just the setting of it just did not align with me. I'm not a samurai guy. I don't get it. I don't feel it. I don't care.
Look, I enjoyed Ghost of Tsushima, but I enjoyed Legends more. So if they turn around and the next trailer's like, hey, it's Legends 2, I'll be like, fuck yeah. I mean, you got me. So we'll see what happens. For now, I'm hesitantly optimistic.
Yeah. Look, Sucker Punch did a fantastic job with the first one. They've got a good legacy, got a good history. Pardon me. It feels like that this will be, you know, somewhat tangentially connected to Ghost of Tsushima. Like, it appears that it's, you know, taking place hundreds of years later. So you might hear legends of, you know, of Jin Sakai. But it's going to be relatively standalone, which may entice me to check it out. And maybe it grabs me a bit quicker in that they've been able to update it and expand on it heading into this new one. So I'll wait and see. Mute goes, I see you more of a ninja guy. Not really. It's either samurai or ninjas. Neither of them are really something that I'm interested in. Like I have... Yeah, the love and fascination for Japanese culture, for like samurais and wearing robes and using katanas for everything and, you know, using senpai and all that bullshit, that all that weeby nonsense is just not within remote care for me. I find it pretty lame. If I was to be like completely honest, not to like discount...
Tell us how you really feel, man.
No, just, yeah, don't discount those that like it. Just for me... Nah, and that's fine. But there's quite a lot of games that I was like, nah. But now they're on PlayStation. Suddenly I'm like, okay, all right, let's see what's going on over here. And that includes a number of Xbox games. Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, which debuted on PS5 earlier this month, is off to an impressive start on the Sony system. According to an in-depth report by data analysis firm Alina Analytics, the title has already sold over 100,000 copies on PlayStation alone, and it is outperforming its Steam counterpart Launch Aligned. While the firm doesn't reveal its exact methodology, it does tout it as the quote, most accurate on the market, end quote. Push Square. So Push Square will be contacting the company to try and get a little more insight into how it's compiling its numbers. However, currently, the source says that the Machine Games latest is selling faster on PS5 than it did on both Xbox Series X and PC. It notes that it's particularly impressive when you consider it's launching late on Sony's platforms after the initial marketing cycle has ended. Alina Analytics data shows that the less people plumped up for early access on the four-month-old game, which makes sense. But since the PS5 version's fully official launch date, it's outperformed its Steam counterpart, as we mentioned earlier, comfortably launch-aligned. They state that the little under 5 million Xbox players have tried out the indie adventure, but, quote, the vast majority, end quote, of these were obtained via the subscription service Game Pass. It then adds that Game Pass ultimately, quote, cannibalizes, end quote, premium game sales and editorializes that this bet isn't paying off for the firm. This does align with our conversation we were having earlier around Clair Obscur, and how that fits within like the impact of Game Pass. As they mentioned, the early access on PS5 kind of made no sense. but I understand that you get like 10 extra bucks. Why not? It doesn't surprise me that, like you and me, when they announced the release date and in that same breath went, it's always coming to PS5. I went, oh, sweet, I'll pay it then. Done.
Yeah.
And I can assure you that most people did the same. If anything, most people, like even me, I booted up on PC through Game Pass and went, yeah, this is all right. I'll play it on PS5. How do you think this looks like? How do you think this looks in your opinion?
It's one of those things where it's hard to be like it's cool that 5 million Xbox players have tried it out, but without knowing what the quote vast majority is that didn't pay for it, essentially, it'd be fascinating to see what those numbers are.
Vast majority implies like 70-80%.
Yeah.
At least for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's cool that it's doing so well on PlayStation. Hopefully that shows that they're like, hey, maybe we can do less of a delay.
Yeah, it really shows that that time frame is going to continue to close.
Yeah.
And so I'm just having a quick look. Sorry, I was having a quick squeeze. So we've got Forza Horizon around the corner, Forza Horizon 5.
It literally comes out this week.
Yeah, it's going to be massive. That part of Age of Empires.
And by this week, I mean tomorrow.
Or right now at time of release. Hi, Forza's available. Like, once again, Doom, simultaneous release. Forza is a late release, but I could probably say with confidence that those numbers are going to be very good as well. Because I also believe that Forza is better than Gran Turismo. Not a hot take. It's a very accurate take. A very lukewarm take. Pardon me. But you look over and see the likes of, you know, Age of Empires, which is doing unremarkable, I would assume. Pretty low conversation. Sea of Thieves did gangbusters. Grounded did fine. Pentiment did reasonable. So big hitters like this, very quickly, Microsoft will likely double down on their, we are now a publisher, we are no longer our own thing.
Yeah.
So look, we ask this every time we discuss Xbox coming to PlayStation. Now, with this information, Max, what do you believe that the window is for when we get Halo?
I don't think we're going to get Halo until their hardware numbers drop more.
Yeah, it's the last nail. Like, we may get Gears of War, like E-Day. That the new Gears, that may be the one, and then we may get, you know, the original trilogy, or at least the first on PlayStation before that, but who knows?
Yeah,
interesting.
Oh, Ryan, they're back.
Who?
Sony has begun rolling out the latest PlayStation 5 firmware update, version 25.03.11.20. It is available right now in the UK. It is being staggered out in a phased approach, however. As announced earlier, the update makes two additions to the console, namely an audio focus feature that allows you to adjust sound using special presets, and a series of classic console themes are coming back from the 30th anniversary celebration.
I thought they were limited, Max. They were only for that.
No.
They couldn't do it.
Gamer Outrage made them do it. Just another notch in their belt of like accomplishments that they did, so they're going to keep fucking doing what they do.
Yeah, that's right.
Fucking chicken jockeying and all that other shit. That's what it leads to. It's a slippery slope from give us our themes to fucking chicken jockeying a movie theater. Mm. Look at what they did to Sonic. And granted, that was good.
They saved him.
They saved Sonic.
But you shouldn't give people the power of complaining will get them what they want. That is not something we should endorse.
Yes, but here are the official patch notes for PlayStation 5's new system software update. We've added audio focus, a feature that supports broader accessibility and allows players to hear quiet in-game sounds and voice chat more clearly. When audio focus is turned on, specific frequencies of quieter sounds are amplified, making car engines, footsteps, sorry, or my fucking Pokemon Go packs are ready to go.
Yeah,
my...
or Max's phone.
I forgot to mute that, sorry. Sounds are amplified, making car engines, footsteps, in-game character voices, and voice chat clearer. Multiple presets are available to enhance specific frequency ranges. To use the audio focus, go to Settings, Sound, Volume, Audio Focus, and turn on Use Audio Focus. What a fucking step that is. This feature is only available when using headphones. That makes sense.
Yeah.
You can now select a design inspired by your favorite PlayStation console generation and apply it to your home screen and other areas. To apply the said designs, go to Settings, System, Appearance, and Sound. And last but not least, we've improved system software performance and stability.
Nice. It wouldn't be a firmware update without that. I was waiting. Like, I didn't read ahead on purpose. I was like, oh, please. Like, I'm going to have some faith. I'm going to have some hope that they've improved those system software and performance. Like, that's all I'm hoping. And they did. So shout out. I like this audio focus idea. It's really cool.
I mean, it makes sense. It was a big fucking selling point for the PS5. They're like, we're making our own audio things.
The Tempest audio engine, yeah.
We're doing Tempest, and we're going to fucking...
Send us pictures of your ear holes, which I don't think we ever...
We're going to 3D scan your ear holes, and we're going to make, like, the perfect fucking sound for your ear alone.
But no one, like, but don't do that, because we didn't think that far ahead. That's what I wonder, like, when can I start sending pictures of my ear hole to Mark Cerny? Because, like, I'm probably going to send him a bunch of things. I do love me that Mark Cerny. He's ooh, what a man. It's funny, I was having a discussion today, like, at the school I was working at. And I was chatting with someone, we're talking about Indiana Jones. And the guy's like, man, I feel like I can't hear the footsteps. They just sort of come out of nowhere. I'm like, well, aren't you lucky? Because today, over the weekend, they dropped a firmware update that'll gaz a thing called Audio Focus. Now, granted, I knew that because it was another podcast I listened to. And he's like, really? I'm like, yes. So, like, there's clearly a need and an interest for this, especially for not us. But we're not far off. Older gamers, older dudes like you and I, our hearings are gonna go.
But this doesn't help you because you don't game with headphones on.
But when I'm old, maybe I will. Older.
When you're older, you won't want things on your ears because they'll hurt.
Oh, that's true. My body does hurt already.
These are for the youngins. The sweaty tryhard.
I was gonna say, like, this is either an accessibility skill or it's an ability to make you sweat. Are you going to be putting on audio focus?
I don't need to. I can hear footsteps.
Look at you with your fucking fancy pants here.
I don't have a problem with that.
I
also really couldn't care less than a single player game. It's like, oh, someone snuck up behind me. Turn around, punch in the face. It's not like I'm playing fucking competitive COD.
Yeah, whatever would help. Whatever would give you an advantage or something like COD.
Of course it does. If you can hear where the enemy's coming from, you can pre-fire before they run around the corner.
That makes sense.
100% an advantage.
It's a shame I don't play COD on my PlayStation. Quick bits. Sorry, timestamps. Quick bits. The first PS Plus extra game for June is confirmed, and it is FBC Firebreak on the 17th of June. This is the latest from Remedy. This is the Federal Bureau of Control little side story with it living within the Control universe, the Alan Wake extended universe. Fucking stoked this coming to PS Plus, though. Hell yeah.
Yeah, the other thing is EA has announced that the new skate game does not have an offline mode. You will have to always be connected to the interwebs to play it.
That's ball bags. Still going to play
it. A fucking live service game, what'd you expect?
It sucks. Still going to play it. Yeah. Now, because there's only like one thing. Oh, yeah.
Bungie have also announced that their next thingamabob, their Vidoc for... Fate's Edge is on the 6th of May, showing what is to come for Destiny 2.
Which I still argue I thought it ended, but that's cool.
Yeah. But the light and dark saga has ended.
Yes. All right. Well, because there was only one quick bit, I'm going to jump in there and I'm going to get these.
Go for it.
And that one. No one. And that one. Games. Here are the games that are coming to your PlayStation this week on the 29th of April. You get Cooking Companions, which sounds like a bets and ass fucking game, coming to PS5 and PS4. Forza Horizon 5 is coming to PS5 and absolutely should want to play it. Fragpunk, coming to PS5. My Vet Practice in the Zoo, PS5. That also could likely be a bets and game. Subway Sim 2. You almost got me with the sim, but maybe not. I'm coming to PS5. On the 30th of April, you get Blazing Trail, the sequel to Blazing Saddles. Not really. Coming to PS5. MotoGP 25, coming to PS5. On the 1st of May, we get Kato Buttered Cat. Delicious. PS5. Despolite, PS5. Kyborg, PS5. And Peglin. I believe that was the creature that they thought the COVID virus came from. The Peglin. And or Pengolin. Either way.
No, that's just what
South Park said.
Benedict Cumberbatch calls a penguin.
Shit. That is coming to PS5 also on the 1st of May.
Would you like the blurb for Cooking Companions?
Yes, I would.
Deep in the woods of the Tartarus Mountains, supplies dwindle and floodwaters are rising.
Okay.
Up the side of a mountain. It's up to you to keep spirits high and make the most of your survival skills. Will you butter up the right person or will you wind up on the chopping block?
Wait. It's a cannibal cooking companion.
No. Oh, this is not a betting game.
No.
It's a visual novel.
Ew, fuck, no, I'm out. You almost had me.
I just clicked on it. It's a fucking weeby ass visual novel.
Lame. Like, it had me a cooking, and I was like, well, maybe there's a cooking game in there for old Betson. I do quite like my cook serve delicious.
Here you go. A bait and switch visual novel, Cooking Companions, which first launched on PC back in 2021, is serving up a...
I think bait and switch may be the most accurate way of explaining this fucking game, Max. It did exactly that.
This cutesy romantic adventure comes with a content warning. Quote, this game may potentially trigger seizures for people with photosensitivity epilepsy, it reads. Viewer discretion is advised. The game is not suitable for children or those who are easily disturbed.
Well, it's been a while since I've had a good seizure, I suppose, so maybe I'll check it out. Yeah, a mute in the chat jumps in and goes, the way you described it makes it sound really cool. It fucking does. Like, it sounds... It almost sounds like a Doki Doki Literature Club sort of twist.
I left that bit out, but it says the seemingly cutesy romantic adventure, which has a similar twist to Doki Doki Literature Club, actually comes with a content warning.
Betson sometimes knows games. It's a shame it's going to be poo. Speaking of poo, that's been us. Thank you so much for joining us once again. We do appreciate every single one of you that takes time out of your day, your week, your whenever to listen to this absolute nonsense. As I've said before, we would do this whether people listened or not, but it is so much better when people do. Apparently, one of the old bosses, my job I used to work at, still checks out the show. So shout out to you, Chris. Thank you. I hope you're doing well, my friend. I hope you're doing well. It's been a very long time. Like a whole, fuck, like 7 years. Damn, time is confronting. But anyways, Max, you know what to do.
All right, everybody. This PlayStation conversation happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials. Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopcultures where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation Pod. And if you are listening to us on podcast service, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watch us on YouTube. Be sure to like, subscribe, and comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. So big shout out to a couple of folks, actually. Mad Triller, good old Sean, some awesome folks that have been jumping in and commenting on the YouTube. Much appreciated. It is one of my highlights of like a Tuesday morning or a Tuesday afternoon when I check my phone, there's a couple of hits on the YouTubes. Much appreciated. Thank you so much. And also for those that like listen live or listen on the pod, if you ever want to be fucking shameless and give us a little bit extra love, feel free to just go put the video on and just mute the tab or whatever. Like, we'll take the extra views. It'll be incredible. Even if you listen to it on YouTube, can you just download the pod anyway? Just, can we just fudge these numbers, right? Let's just fake this shit. You know, look, we're in the world of fucking fake news. Let's fake some numbers. And maybe something will happen. It won't. I don't want to fake numbers. I hate that. It makes me feel really uncomfortable inside. But if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist as well. But until next week, I'm Ryan Benson.
I'm Max Kipper.
Well, we about to jump in, then I killed you. And that was for the
No, past. No. Yeah, you completely threw me off. I'm like, do I need to say something? Am I done? Is my bit over?
Yeah. Nah, the whole show's kind of over, really.